Sorry. I didn't get the...
Get together.
I didn't get the mic turned around properly enough. This is Linoleum Knife.
A podcast of the cinema.
We're the hosts. I'm Dave White. I'm a film critic for The Wrap. You're Alonzo Duralde. You're a film critic for The Wrap and also sort of the boss of the reviews who assigns things to various people. You're the editor.
I'm the film reviews editor at The Wrap.
Film reviews editor at The Wrap. That's what I was trying to say.
Yes, co-hosted Who Shot You, co-hosted Breakfast All Day. But really, my heart is here with you people.
Oh, you people? Does that include me?
Yes. The listeners and co-host of Linoleum Knife.
Who would you say your heart is with more? Them people or me?
You and our higher level Patreon members. No, I'm kidding. All of our listeners, all of our Patreon members, but Dave most of all.
That's right. That's correct.
Okay, just so we get that clear.
Did you like my sound check?
Let's not even go into it. This is a clean podcast.
Did you like my sound check?
Yes. Yes, it was very clever.
It was filthy, and I can't say it.
Yes, please don't.
Because this is a clean podcast.
It is.
If you go to Apple Podcasts, ours has a little box next to it that says clean, I guess.
Clean, it does.
Does it?
Okay. Yes.
I don't know how they differentiate those things on the site.
When I post it,
the other one's called dirty?
Explicit.
Oh, okay.
Yes. But not us.
Not us, no. We're really explicit when these microphones are turned on.
Yes.
But our public-facing... Should we collect the sound checks?
Oh, I've been erasing the sound checks.
Into a file.
No, no one needs to hear the sound checks. I promise you that.
That was a good one, though.
Well...
It rhymed. It was a song. I made up a song.
Okay.
Right away.
And it is forever lost to the ages, so let's not dwell on it.
It's going to live in my heart.
Well, yes. Part of the reason we have to keep doing sound checks is because we're having weird equipment
things. This
has
been a really crappy week of equipment situations.
Yeah.
We even have a new device.
Uh-huh.
That's an M-Track 2x2. I don't even know what that means.
I don't even know either.
And it
worked the first time I plugged it in and used it.
One moment, and now it's not working.
And then when
anymore.
We actually came time to record a show with it, it suddenly was like, nope, that was it. That's all you're getting from me. So anyway, an expert will help me at some point, and we'll figure it out.
Something will happen, and everything is going to be all right.
Yes. Tell me everything's going to be fine.
Everything's
going
to be fine.
Okay.
I'm looking at this list of movies that we have to talk about this week.
It's February.
It's the first week of February, and the selections are minimal.
The pickings are slim right now.
Because
right now is all about, hey, I hear you haven't seen Green Book yet. It's nominated for a bunch of Oscars.
It sure is.
Why don't you go see Bohemian Rhapsody?
That's another one that's nominated for a lot of Academy Awards.
Hey.
We have, at the end of the show, we have some letters.
Yes.
The people telling us we're wrong.
Well.
it doesn't happen very often, and I'm sort of stoked to read those letters about us being wrong.
Well, you know.
I mean, people tell us all the time. They're like, oh, I don't always disagree with you. Or sometimes they'll say, I love this show, but I almost never
agree
with
you. Yes.
Yeah. But no one ever really gets into specifically. I'm not asking for you to do this,
No.
Because the rule number one of this, of my life, is I don't fight with anybody about anything. Like, I'll tell you what I think, but we're not gonna mix it up about a movie.
Especially about opinions. No way.
But yeah, we have some interesting at the end of the show.
Yes. Okay, but we also have some new 5-star reviews to read, so we're excited about that too.
Okay, sure, yeah. I love 5-star reviews, but very much like getting a gift in the mail from a listener, like when people send a cookbook or something.
Uh-huh. So
I'm always feeling like, oh, I'm not worthy.
Oh, you know, stop.
Like, and then so when I read a 5-star review, I'm like, excuse us, we're going to pat ourselves on the back.
The difference is we ask people to write 5-star reviews. We don't ask
We demand.
Yes.
But but that still doesn't mean I feel like I'm worth it when I read it out loud.
You know, believe in yourself, Dave White.
I do. I just don't want to, like, sound the trombone.
That's other people do it for us. And we have algorithms to conquer, and that's why those reviews are so handy helpful.
I'm aware. Okay. I understand. Listen, I understand lots of things.
Sure. I'm glad we cleared that up.
What about this Miss Bala? She's Miss Bala 2018. 2019.
I know. You're still writing 2018 on the mental checks.
Formerly, she was Miss Bala 2011.
15,
2012. I don't know what year she was Miss Bala.
20.
Before. Can you win Miss Bala more than once?
Well, you can make Miss Bala more than once. Yeah, this we know, because this is a remake of a Mexican film from 2011 that played at Cannes. That was their Oscar entry that year, but it didn't get a nomination.
Right.
And now we get the remake, and the remake is very American. In terms of the fact that the original one is pretty dang bleak.
Right.
And this one is more like a, you know, She's gonna make it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen the original, but this one, you know, like you said, it's full of can-do spirit.
Yeah, she gets things done.
Can kill spirit.
Her talent is getting things done. That was actually one of my big disappointments of both Miss Balas, is that there's never a talent portion, because somebody gets thrown into this Miss Baja California pageant with little preparation, and I wanted them to have to, like, you know, play the xylophone or something.
The talent is taking out the bad guys.
In the new one, yeah.
Taking out the trash.
So in the new one, which is directed by Catherine Hardwicke, Gina Rodriguez stars as an L.A. makeup artist who travels down to Tijuana to visit her best friend and help her out in the Miss Baja California pageant to do her makeup. And she is very much Spanish as a second language. Like, you know, her mom was Mexican, her dad was American. So she's a little, you know, fish out of water in Tijuana. They go out that night to this nightclub where these, like, corrupt police types are going to be, who have a lot to do with, have a lot of sway in the pageant, and her friend wants to sort of, like, you know, chum up to them. And while Gina Rodriguez is in the bathroom, a bunch of, you know, bad cartel guys with guns come storming in. There's chaos, and Gina Rodriguez is separated from her friend, is trying to find her, and in doing so, winds up getting re-kidnapped by the cartel guys, who force her to drive this car and park it, and then it turns out to have a bomb in it, which blows up a DEA safe house, and the DEA captures her, and they think that she's in cahoots with the cartel,
right.
So both sides are trying to use her, and they're, like, you know, threatening her if she doesn't play along. Finally, she realizes that neither side is going to help her out, so she's just got to Gina's got to do Gina if she's going to get out of this thing alive and get her friend out.
Use what you got to get what you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's, the action is good. Like,
yes.
Catherine Hardwicke is a genre filmmaker. She knows how to, like, keep stuff moving along.
Right.
There is a weird sense of, like, I sent Yolanda Machado to review this.
Yes.
And she was very much like, yeah, it's great that there's so many Latin people on both sides of the camera, but this is another
movie. Yeah, it's like a nearly all Latino crew.
Right.
Yeah.
She goes, but this is still, like, another movie where, like, all the characters are drug dealers or corrupt politicians or abused women, you know?
Right.
And the thing about when you're watching the original Miss Bala, because it's a Mexican film, it feels like a sort of searing critique. And then when you watch this one, it's kind of like, it's that thing of, like, I can say this about my family, but you can't say this about my family.
You know?
So,
no,
like,
exactly.
Having a U.S. studio and an American director making this movie, it suddenly then becomes another movie where all the Mexicans are drug dealers.
Right.
So that's,
and even though it's not meant to be a Trumpy movie, it sort of becomes one.
Stuff gets driven back and forth across the border, yeah. But, you know, through the checkpoints.
Yeah.
Gina Rodriguez is really good. She's acting the crap out of it.
I like her.
She's fine, yeah.
I like her. I would like a better movie for her.
The movie ends in a way that suggests, like, they want to build an action franchise around her.
Well, yeah.
Which is kind of like, really? Now we're going to have, like, you know, like the old joke, Sam Jackson's going to come in and recruit her for the Avengers. Like, that's kind of how it ends.
Oh, yeah.
Way. It's, you know, which is definitely not how the original ends.
There is no such thing as a big studio movie anymore.
That they don't want to make five more
of.
Yeah.
And this is another one.
Well, it's probably not going to happen.
And well, no, it's not, because it made $35 this weekend.
Yes.
And also, you know, it's... There would need to be sequels that... If this were sort of a surprise, you know, box office hit,
mm-hmm.
I would want the sequel to be It's Addams Family Values.
Or it's Gremlins 2.
Or It's Gremlins 2. No, right. I love Gremlins, but like... I would want the sequel to be The Improvement, because it's just...
Oh, I was thinking The Undoing, but yes, either way.
It's boring.
It's boring. What's also annoying is that, like, the head cartel guy, who they really kind of muddy the waters about, like, is she going along to get along, or is there Stockholm Syndrome setting in? Like, they kind of imply there's something going on between them, which is creepy, because, you know... She is his captive.
Uh-huh.
He gets this great monologue about how, like, yeah, I was born in Tijuana, but then I grew up in Bakersfield, and then they deported my mom and me after high school, and so I'm too Mexican to be American, and I'm too American to be Mexican.
Right.
But Gloria never gets that equivalent speech. Like, she seems to have a similar background, but we don't know enough about her.
So no.
She's a bit of a blank, you know. Anyway, yeah, so this is kind of a missed opportunity.
I like the idea of this being a film about, you know, women, the predicament of being a woman sort of pressed on all sides.
Oh, yeah, by the patriarchy, for sure.
And
that could have been
it. And if it had been a better film, that would have been more resonant.
Right.
But, yeah, it's just sort of like a... It's a whatever action movie.
It's like, how long...
About a subject you've seen way too many films about already.
How long is it going to take for her to basically be in an evening gown and heels carrying an AR-15? Like, that's what the whole movie is leading up to. And they get there.
Well, of course. You were hoping for them to do that. Helen Mirren's going to do it, then... Gina Rodriguez is going to do it, too.
You're right.
That's what's up.
Look, Gina Rodriguez is good. She's no Helen Mirren.
Yet?
Give her time.
Yeah. There's still... Listen, what is she?
She's got 17?
She's young.
Yes.
She's got plenty of time.
Yes.
She can be Helen Mirren if she wants.
One day? Yeah. Yes. I'm not barring that. Just saying she's not there now.
Okay, so let's move along to Velvet Buzzsaw.
Oh, yes. A movie that, is, like, in the first 5 minutes, I was like, oh, Dave White's got to watch this.
I got to tell you something. You personally, Alonzo Duralde, you think that just because I love contemporary art...
Yeah.
...and going to the galleries and, you know... Reading about it and
subscribing to art forum,
learning about all that stuff, all that thing, all the stuff that you do when you like art.
Mm-hmm.
You think that any movie that comes along, I'm going to have some kind of special insight?
Well, yeah,
not always the case.
Well, I think more. Look, of anybody I know. Practically.
I'm just trying to lower your expectations for me.
I know...
Across the board.
I know you're not, like, at, you know, fancy cocktail parties with Eli Broad or whatever, but...
God, help me.
You at least... You have more of a working knowledge of that world and, like, what in a movie about that world would be garbage or not than almost anybody I know. So, you are my BS detector on this movie to be like, well, that's valid, that's
ridiculous. But what I'm trying to tell you is that I'm not a good BS detector because... every, or maybe I am, I don't know, every time there's a movie set in the art world mm-hmm. or near the art world,
right.
or if the characters come into contact with the art world,
mm-hmm.
so far in my viewing experience, there are two paths that these films take.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the path of that movie with Scott Eastwood.
Oh, yes.
What's that one?
The one where Alan Alda leaves him all the art.
Yeah, what's it called? I forget the name of it.
The Longest Ride?
Something like that. Mm. It's like a Nicholas Sparks-ish thing. Or it might even be a Nicholas.
An actual Nicholas Sparks.
I can't remember. In any case, this is a film, you know, where Scott Eastwood stands in front of, you know, a Cy Twombly painting. It's like, this is BS. Like, I'm like, no, you're a stupid person. There's two different things, you know, like.
Your kid could not do that.
And it's not because it's a Cy Twombly, because some people who love art don't like Cy Twombly.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been any well-known 20th century, you know, important figure in art history.
Sure.
And that character would have looked at it and said, this is BS.
Where you got all the
Thomas Kincaid.
Thomas Kincaid, thank you. I was blanking on that name.
But like,
I bought me some Ann Gettys.
It's a film that Scott Eastwood movie is a film that distrusts any
non-representational
art. Right. Yeah. Anything that isn't, you know,
a bowl of fruit.
A thing you can look at and understand immediately.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's that kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the movie that knows about the art world,
mm-hmm.
either a little or a lot, and wants to shred it to pieces.
Or just enough to be dangerous.
Yeah. And this is the movie that wants to shred it to pieces.
Well, this is technically the second one that Jake Gyllenhaal has made, right? Would you put Nocturnal Animals in that category?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So here's the thing about the movies that shred it to pieces. They all go after the same targets.
Uh-huh.
You know, shallow people, disingenuous people, phonies, grifters, and when I
snobs.
Use
snobs.
Yeah, snobs, and that's everyone.
Right.
There's never one person in the movie who's like, you know, I'm a working artist and I really feel like I'm doing something valuable with my life and my career, and you know, I don't make my full living from the things I sell. Maybe I'm like a teacher or a writer or whatever. And then here's my gallerist. My gallerist is really, you know, a good person and really believes in me. And here, like,
and we believe in the aesthetics.
I've met some of the collectors, and they're all good people who really love art. They're not like gaming the system. They're not like, who's the dude that was terrible to Nigella Lawson?
Saatchi.
Yeah, Saatchi. They're not that guy who's like, I'm going to buy all the Damien Hirsts and then dump them and try to ruin his career. Like, that's... Obviously, those people are not interesting enough to make a movie about.
Clearly, no.
It's so everybody in these art satire films is the worst possible toxic human being that you would want to encounter. And that's Velvet Buzzsaw.
It's like the cast of Showgirls, but in a gallery.
Kinda, yeah. And so, part of me finds this hilarious,
mm-hmm.
just from a personal perspective, because as a person who, you know, I have friends who are artists, and I have friends who have done, you know, curatorial work, and I have friends who have run art galleries, and who still do, and I don't know a single a-hole. And I don't know if that means that I've just sort of, if this is the art world equivalent of my trailer bubble, where like I've built this little cocoon around myself where bad things don't get in.
And you don't see trailers of movies?
Yeah, I don't go see trailers. I don't watch trailers of films if I can at all help it.
Yeah.
But I've never met anybody in the art world that I've come into contact with, that mm-hmm. I've dealt with, who felt like bad news, you know, stay away from that person.
Well, that's not dramatically interesting.
No, I know it's not. And I do know one very famous Well, let me say it this way. I know of one very famous artist who is a complete piece of garbage because this artist was immensely cruel to one of our friends. So I know those people are out there.
Sure.
I know there are they're out there. But I don't know any of them in my life. And so I watch a movie like Velvet Buzzsaw, and I'll get to the plot of it in a minute. I watch a movie like Velvet Buzzsaw, and I think, oh, this is A, hilarious, B, tedious, because can we make up a smarter, more incisive satire about stuff? Can it be less sledgehammery? Because the art world is such a hermetically sealed place sometimes that in order to satirize it for a wide audience, you really have to just come at it with like a big club.
Yeah.
And that's not interesting, because after a while you see the same things being smashed again and again and again. I don't care about that.
Right.
So the satire of this film is not interesting to me. But now I'll tell you the plot. Because I can't tell you the plot. I can't tell you the other thing that's not interesting to me until I tell you the plot.
Fair enough.
Jake Gyllenhaal is a magical art critic. And when I say he is a magical art critic, I mean, not only is he exceptionally good looking and has funny glasses, but he's bisexual and he can just kind of get it with anyone he wants.
Mm-hmm.
He's also doing what I consider to be a fairly ridiculous series of cliched gay mannerisms.
There's a lot of hands happening.
Yeah. So he's a magical art critic, and the reason I call him magical is because his reviews can make or break a career.
He has the kind of power that, like, the New York Times has over Broadway.
Right. But think about this, right? The New York Times art critic, Roberta Smith, she's constantly... I read her all the time. I follow her on Twitter. And she's always like, if critics mattered, I would tell you that this person's career should take off. And her husband, Jerry Saltz, another art critic.
Right.
The two most well-known, I want to say that perhaps... cautiously, maybe they aren't the two most well-known art critics in the world, but in the country, but they're the two most well-known art critics to me.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't name you one to save my life, so I'll take your word for it.
They're married art critics in New York, and they...
So they're the us of art.
Yes, Alonso. Except... people know who they are.
Right. Well, small difference, but
they're big potatoes and we're the teeny potatoes, the little fingerlings.
Yeah.
Jerry Saltz was on that ridiculous...
Oh, that's right. The Bravo show.
Bravo show, work of art. God, I love that show. I miss that show so much. It sucked. I really loved it.
Hosted by SJP.
Yeah. Well, hosted by China Chow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And executive produced by
executive SJP, produced right. by Sarah Jessica Parker. Okay, right. Anyway, those two, they'll tell you till they're blue in the face about an artist you should love. But it ain't like, you know,
they can snap a finger and make it happen.
They're not snapping a finger and making it happen, and nor are they snapping a finger and breaking someone's career.
Right.
And so the film, you know, shows him with this ability.
Yes.
Rene Russo is a gallerist who in Los Angeles, it's set in Los Angeles, who is, you know, mean. Toni Collette is a curator.
She begins as a museum curator and then becomes
a consultant.
A buyer for a mystery billionaire.
A private consultant. And my favorite thing about the Toni Collette character is, A, it's Toni Collette. B, she has a great blunt bob wig. C, she works for LAMA, which is not to be confused with LACMA, the L.A. County Museum of Art. It's also not meant to be confused with MoCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, which is downtown. across the street from the Broad, and that is where she gets out of the car to go into Lama, where she then says, it's so great that we can look out the window and see the La Brea tar pits, which is not what you can do downtown across the street from the Broad, but it is what you can do from LACMA,
which is on Miracle Mile.
Yes. Everybody following this? It's a wonderful little clever Los Angeles plays itself moment that knows it's wrong and is going for it anyway.
Here's something I didn't realize.
What?
Zoe Ashton, who plays Josefina,
okay,
was also in Nocturnal Animals.
Was she?
Yeah.
Well, then. So Josefina is Rene Russo's...
one of her assistants.
Assistant, who stumbles across the work of an outsider artist who has died. Mm-hmm. A very Henry Darger sort of...
Recluse. Vetrel Dease.
Like, he was even a janitor in this film.
Right.
And then there's another artist played by John Malkovich, who is an amalgam of everyone. He's Jeff Koons. He's Damien Hirst. He's Bryce Mars.
He's a brand.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a whole factory downstairs from his studio that just mass produces his, like, lithos and whatever, you know.
Yeah. And at the end, you see him drawing circles, squiggly lines in the beach, like Bryce Martin sort of paintings. And he is, you know, a sort of a peripheral character.
Yeah.
So they find this art, and she brings it to Rene Russo, and Rene Russo's like, we're going to make this the next big thing, because it's genius. Well, the reason everyone thinks it's genius is because it's haunted art.
Yeah.
Literally haunted by a spirit that transfixes the viewer and makes them believe that it's the most visionary work they've ever seen in their life. Everybody who looks at it not only falls in love with it, collectors have to have it, but if you look at it, very much like the video in The Ring, you die.
Right.
So what happens next in the second half of the movie is this very final destination sort of situation where, one by one, art literally kills people. Like, Toni Collette sticks her arm in an interactive sphere, and it wood chippers her arm to pieces. And then, of course, she lies next to it in the pool of blood.
And people assume it's part of the exhibition.
People assume it's part of the exhibition, which is, like, the lowest hanging fruit of any art satire. Like, there's another scene in the movie where a guy walks into Malkovich's studio and there are bags of trash waiting to go outside, and the guy goes, oh, this is really amazing. And John Malkovich goes, it's not art. And then he just keep walking past it. How many times can you have that joke in a film?
It always works.
But it's boring and it's tired. Like, it's not funny. It's just something that you expect.
Okay, this is where I interject. The time you took me to a gallery that had a pile of lint that was the art.
Okay.
So, for me, whenever somebody mistakes
it... And how was it placed? How was it presented in the gallery?
I guess it was on a pedestal.
First of all, it was in a gallery.
Okay.
And the hours and the doors were open for business, and it was on a platform in the middle of the room. So, there's no mistaking that for something that someone's going to throw away.
Okay, but if somebody has like an empty shelf, you know, on a wall, or like somebody leaves a mop and bucket in the room of, you know, of interactive sculpture or whatever, I totally get the idea of like, no, that could be art as far as I know. So that joke always works for me. Sorry if you're bored by it.
I'm bored by that
fancy
joke.
Art man.
I'm bored by that joke because I see it every single... If you saw the same joke about the same thing in every movie or TV,
As long as you know, you have to do it right. But I think they did it right.
So okay, somebody do it right then, because it's tedious.
I don't know. You know, you've been citing Final Destination as your thing for this movie.
Yeah. And
I think it's the thing is like the Toni Collette one is the only one where there's any sort of practical thing involved. The other ones are all sort of like
Well,
yeah, I mean, if somebody gets killed by people are killed by things that shouldn't kill them.
Correct.
You know, and so it's not like a safe falls on their heads. It's like there's something mystical and occult and weird going on with it. So,
I understand that.
The spirit that's haunting the art is given a setup almost Freddy Krueger-esque.
Yes.
You know, in terms of like these terrible things that happened. Right. And, you know, da da da. And so, but yeah, it you know, I've heard this compared to a giallo, which is of course a genre about which,
sure,
I know very little, so
especially,
I can't say.
Especially, well, there's one death that is particularly giallo-esque.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, but yeah, I don't know. I was entertained by this movie, and I'm glad I saw it.
I wasn't unentertained. I just, there's so much about it that I think, well, that's stupid.
But
and why aren't they killing people more inventively, or more, you know, more visually in a more visually spectacular way?
My thing with it is, though, that like it's not a particularly good art world satire.
No.
Even as somebody who doesn't know the world, right, as well as you do. And it's also not that great a horror film.
No,
so
it's not, there's nothing scary about it.
No. So it's just, but it is, I did like the cartooniness of it. Like, once you sort of realize that this is not going to have any resemblance to how human beings interact, and that all of these characters, I mean, like, there's a rival gallerist named John Don Don.
Yeah.
You know, if you just sort of go with the excess of it all,
right,
it's fun.
No, it is a not unentertaining, like you said, cartoonish, film, and it's clearly informed by, you know, Gilroy's, you know, involvement in the art world himself in one way or another. I know his mother was a sculptor. I don't know much about her.
Mm-hmm.
But he comes from that somewhere.
Yeah, and his father was a celebrated playwright and screenwriter, so I'm sure, like, you know, you have money and an into the art world, so he's no doubt been a collector or something over the years.
Here's my question. Is he mad that he can't get on the short list at, like, the Gagosian show, where they just call him and say, hey, we got the, you know, you want to come in for the preview and see what you want? Like,
all the red stickers are out by the time he shows up.
Yeah, well, the big galleries don't put the red sticker on the wall.
Well,
but
whatever.
Like, is he mad? Like, that's my question. Like, I want to know. I want to know who pissed you off. That's what I want to know. I'd like to see that documentary. You know, like, here's the art world that I hate, and why I hate them, and like.
They know what they did.
Yeah, they know what they did. Exactly. That's what I want to know. But otherwise, you know, I just nothing. I'll say it again. I haven't met any terrible people, and I'm wondering if that's just me or what.
Would you take this even less seriously if you had seen it in a theater than if you watched it on Netflix, or does it matter?
No, because this movie isn't. It's not interesting filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
So I don't care where I watch it.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because like there were certain things in Nightcrawler that seemed extreme, but at the same time felt very true.
Yeah, I thought Nightcrawler was a pretty cool movie.
Yeah, you know, like it seemed to be talking about like a genuine,
equally
state of events,
equally,
you know,
heavy-handed.
Sure. Yeah. No. He is not operating in subtle brushstrokes here, but at least with Nightcrawler, it was about a real thing that happens that has real world consequences about people's lives and the media and that kind of stuff. And this one is just sort of like a grotesquerie, you know.
Yeah. And because it is the first of the year, that means it's time for Romanian cinema.
They don't all come out at the beginning of the year.
They don't, but this particular director's films have been seen by me in the Januaries.
So he's the Will Smith of the post-MLK weekend.
Listen, his name is Cornel... I'm going to kill his name. Corneliu Porumboiu.
Okay.
And he is... He's one of the main Romanian New Wave dudes.
Yeah.
1208 East of Bucharest.
Seen it.
The Treasure.
Have not seen it, but I remember when you were
just great. Well, he has a new documentary about. And it's his second documentary about soccer/football.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first one, which I have not seen, is called The Second Game, where he watches a 25-year-old game with his father, who was the referee of that game.
Was it like Mystery Science Theater?
No.
Okay.
No. He's talking to his father. His father was the referee of this.
Like, I understand that, but like, game. Is the whole movie just like footage of the game?
And I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Okay,
but it's not MST.
I don't know.
Well, you do know.
I'm not saying that it's funny. I'm just saying this: is it a vintage footage of this game with the voiceovers?
I'm simultaneously eye rolling and side eyeing you at the same
time. Fine, carry on.
I shall.
Why don't you talk about the movie you have seen?
Yes, it's called Infinite Football.
Mm-hmm.
It is a short documentary. It's about 75 minutes long. It's like this, about the length of Dumbo, really.
Okay.
And,
the original.
Yeah, the original, not whatever's coming down the road here. And it is about Porumbuyu's friend,
mm-hmm.
who, as a... in his late teenage years, was injured twice in the course of 1 year. He was an avid soccer player.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm an American, I'm going to call this soccer.
Yes.
Forgive me, everyone else who's not outside.
Sorry, Europe.
Who's not in the United States. Very avid soccer player. And no real evidence that he was going to become, you know, pro or anything. Just that he loved it and he was always doing it. But he was injured on the field. He recovered from that. And it was a painful recovery. And it was a really screwed up injury that the two bones in his lower leg, like, fused together and they healed wrongly. And, yeah. Then... he was injured on the job as well, in the same place, the same leg. Killed his ability to do anything.
Right.
You know, he walks and, you know, he's not disabled, you know, because of it, but...
he can't run.
He can't really run like he did.
Sure.
Can't really play the game the way he wants to anymore. So now he's sort of a bureaucrat in his, you know, his little town, mid-level sort of city hall, kind of the guy you call when you've got, you know, a trouble with the street outside your house. You know, right. You need a permit for something, and he sends you to the right office. Like, that's his job. He's got a desk job. He's this, you know, sort of a functionary clerk. And he has spent his adult life obsessing over how to make the game safer.
Huh.
To minimize injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it had only been a different game,
right,
he would still be playing it, perhaps. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he sets up all these rules that he's always tinkering, you know, with his charts. Like, you know, people who, like, create models or do trains in the basement, you know.
Lionel trains.
Yeah, trains in the basement, that kind of thing. He's always, that's his spare time, that's what he's doing.
Like Sabutio or? Sabutio, you know, you've seen it. It's that tabletop soccer game where all the players are on little like wobbly semicircle or semispherical things and you like flick them forwards.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, remember in Spice World?
Yes.
Where Sporty Spice comes down like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
But then she like flicks the thing on the tabletop game. That's Sabutio.
I didn't know that even had a name.
Yes.
I just thought, oh, that's European foosball.
They have foosball also.
Okay, so anyway.
I love that that's your one thank point you. Of relation.
Thank you for spice worlding the explanation to me. This is one reason that we are hosting a podcast together. It's another reason I married you.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Where was I?
Tabletop soccer.
Okay. He's got mostly got these charts. These charts, these plans, right? Mm-hmm. So he wants to free the ball in the game. Because in his mind, the ball is the star, not the football player.
Right.
The ball. And he wants to do this by restricting the movements of the players, like keeping them in zones and they can't cross over the lines of these zones. So in some instances of his plan, there are like six zones on the field and everyone has to stay in their zone.
Oh, boy.
Now, there is an element of the absurd to all of this.
Yes.
But the film never mocks him. Like this, if this had been any kind of mockumentary,
sure,
then this person would have been depicted as delusional. Mm-hmm. But there's so much affection and care between these two guys. Like this important Romanian filmmaker and his friend who had a bad string of luck and now wants to keep revisiting the site of his
trauma.
To see if he can make sense of it for himself and see if he can make it better for other people.
Hmm.
And everybody he talks to in the real, you know, world of football is like, well, that's not football. I mean, sure, that looks like an interesting game, but it's not football.
Right.
So don't call it that. Like, maybe call it something else. He's like, no. This is football 2.0 or maybe 5.0. Like, he's never going to give it up.
Right. He's a visionary.
And in the course of the film, you know, he starts laying out like all of his philosophical ideas about it. And he's referencing, you know, the Bible and, you know, Plato's cave and you name, you know, he's being a literary critic in a way by pulling in things that support his thesis. That you might not think about in, pulling in to support his thesis. It is ultimately both really affectionate and very sort of melancholy. Because you want him to be happy. He's not a bad person. He's not like crazy. He's just a guy that got, you know, hurt.
Right.
And wants to make things better for himself and for others. And he even at one point he talks about like sort of the metaphysical aspects of what happened to him. He's like, well, if God loves me and God shows his love to people by correcting them, by punishing them, what did I do to be punished in this way?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so it's a very, like I say, it becomes quite sad sometimes.
Yeah.
But ultimately, not a sad project for this guy. Like, he's content to keep on tinkering. I really love this. It's short and easy to watch, and you don't have to care about sports at all, because God knows I don't. And there are moments, I'll say this as well, there are moments where you question if what you're watching is a documentary or some strange sort of filmmaker in-joke. But then it bounces back from that and you think, okay, well, they're probably having us on in a little bit of ways here, because at two different points in the film, people reference the names of films by Cristi Puiu, who is another big Romanian filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
They reference the film Sierra Nevada, and they reference the film Aurora, which are both by him. They don't say, oh, we are now talking about these films. They just say those words. And in the context of a description of a conversation about something else.
Right.
And when I heard those words, I thought, wait a second. That's the name of a movie by one of your colleagues. Who's talking now and why?
Is this an elaborate prank?
Is this a prank? And then then 5 minutes later, you're thinking, okay, no, it's not a prank. This might have been a little, you know, pointed shout out, but it's not a prank.
I see.
But it did feel like they did feel like pointed shout outs.
And where can people see this movie?
iTunes.
Ah, okay.
It opened in New York, I think, at the end of last year. Mm. It did not open in Los Angeles in a proper way. It screened here one night a couple weeks ago at the Downtown Independent Acropolis, of course.
Right.
Brought it. And you know, Grasshopper is the distributor, and they are, like, they are my new Cinema Guild. I mean, I still love Cinema Guild, but Grasshopper releases some of the most unusual and just wonderful and weird things. So it was here one night, and now on as of February 12th, I think, it's going to be available on iTunes to rent.
So next week, okay.
Next, yeah, like in about a week.
Okay.
Highly recommend it.
All right, then. What's your DVD pick?
Towards Matilda.
Oh. Tell the people.
I'm going to tell the people. Let me get my glasses on. It is a 2005 documentary. Speaking of Grasshopper, Grasshopper put this out, too.
Oh.
2005 documentary from Claire Denis. Hmm. It's about the choreographer Mathilde Monnier.
Mm-hmm.
And you see her, you know, practicing. You see her warming up in the morning to PJ Harvey songs. You see her leading her troupe through this sort of avant-garde rehearsal. And there are interviews, you know, with her as well, where she's being very theoretical about dance in a way that isn't incredibly direct and straightforward, but it's definitely the way an artist would speak about their art.
Sure.
It's the way some artists would speak about their art.
At angles.
Correct. It's gorgeous because it's a Claire Denis film, of course. And it is the DVD that we got sent also features a 2015 documentary from Claire Denis called The Bridging Camp, and I don't know what it's about. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm going to. So this is two documentaries on one disc, Towards Mathilde from Claire Denis, from Grasshopper.
One of your favorite living filmmakers.
I'm very happy.
Well, by sheer coincidence, my DVD pick also happens to be part of the Romanian New Wave.
Oh?
Yes.
Oh?
Yes.
What?
Criterion
yes.
just put out 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days.
Oh. did you see what Manola said about that on Twitter?
What?
She goes, I nearly passed out watching that movie.
It's pretty intense. It was my favorite film of 2008, I want to say, when it came out.
It's the kind of really great film that I never want to see again.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, like, I, you know, we have the DVD, and I will keep it at the library, but I don't know when I'm going to pop it in to watch
it
again.
Are you going to, oh, it's Saturday night, I'm feeling cozy.
Yeah.
Let's have a piece of cake and watch this
drama about how difficult it was to get a legal abortion in Romania under, you know, the communists. Yeah, it's very, very intense, but no less great for it.
Yeah, it's a great film. It's tough.
It is a tough sit.
It's tough.
But it's brilliant, and the Criterion collection that is the Blu-ray that is out has an essay by our friend Ella Taylor.
Yes.
And it is I think the movie that really kind of kicked off the rest of the world paying attention to what's happening in Romania. Cristian Mungiu's film. It's got a lot of really good actors that you see in other films, like the woman that Lafka gave an award to for Death of Mr. Lazarescu is in it. I think we gave the guy, the abortionist in 4 months, we gave the best supporting actor to that year.
Yeah.
Very, very intense movie, but really great. And I think one of the testaments to how fascinating it is that when it came out, both anti-choice and pro-choice people took it as being on their side.
Yeah.
And like pointed to it as an example of, see, this is why we're right. So, you know, not a lot of movies that deal with abortion can do that. So wherever you are on the spectrum, great movie. You should see it.
Okay, so the first is not the first letter. We got letters. The first letter is not a letter. It was just a message that Nayland sent us. Our friend Nayland Blake.
Yes. Speaking of the art world.
Speaking of the art world, people that we know that who've been on this show that we adore. This is from a few weeks ago, actually. He's talking about Ralph Breaks the Internet. And he said, I mostly agree with you about this movie with one reservation. I think the movie is less about toxic internet life and more about how to be a good friend and let your friends grow. Ralph's insecurities become monstrous when Vanellope essentially gets a big crush on the Gal Gadot character and then exhibits the beginnings of a life beyond her relationship with him.
Right.
The fear that she won't need him leads to his virus behaving the way it does. So a bit more subtle emotionally with a bit of a queer undercurrent. Still not great, but a bit more than you gave it credit for.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know what? I think he's right.
No, I think that's a totally valid read.
I think he's right.
I think there have been a lot of kids' movies that are about some version of that, about allowing, you know, letting people move on or, you know, whatever. But no, that's a totally valid read.
Yeah. Okay, so here's one from Mike. And I'm going to read chunks of it so I can address all the things. But this is about Green Book. Why is it that most critics from L.A. hate Green Book, but the rest of America loves the movie? How is it a white redemption story? Manola's comments on the movie are hers. But again, as a black man, I enjoyed it. Why do L.A. critics have to find something to piss on if it doesn't suit their agenda? It is an agenda. It angers me the way some things come out of California. The scary thing is I'm convinced that people will jump on something that bothers them politically. You don't speak for me as an avid black movie fan. Okay, well, let's stop there because there's more, but he's talking. Then he goes off to talk about Tarantino, and I want to stay focused on this one side.
Sure.
So I want to take this bit by bit so we can address the various points.
Okay.
Why is it the most critics from L.A. hate Green Book, but the rest of America loves the movie? I don't understand that position, and here's why. Film critics are not all from Los Angeles. I mean, as you know, and it wasn't just film critics in Los Angeles that disliked this film. It was a lot of critics. Most film critics weren't into this movie.
And, you know, I'd say in both directions, most film critics from most places were not fans, but I do know ones here who are.
Oh, Jesse and
Leonard Maltin. They loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. Christy liked it.
Yeah. The people involved, those names came up during the LAFCO vote. People were voting for, you know, Mortensen or Ali or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Mark Harris, who is based in New York, is as against Green Book as any critic I've ever read.
Right.
I don't think that's a local thing. And certainly, this show never intends to speak for anybody but the people who are talking on it.
Right.
So we aren't speaking for you, nor do we think we are, nor do we intend to be.
Right. No, I would never presume to speak for an audience member, a person listening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to tell you what you should think about a film.
No.
I'm telling you what I think about a film.
Exactly.
And if we disagree, you know, vehemently, then we're going to disagree.
Yeah.
And I want to say something very, very important about this. When I say it's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
You're not wrong for liking anything you like.
Disliking anything you dislike.
Unless what you like is, you know, Hitler, you're not wrong to like the thing you like.
Right.
If you can come up with reasons why you like the thing, and they run counter to the reasons that other people like it or dislike it, you're not wrong. Just support your argument. You know, have a position and say why you liked it. Now, were we mouthy and going in on it during the group meetup for this for that show? Oh yes, we were. And the reason we were is because there were films this past year that were made by black directors, black filmmakers, like Black Klansman. You know, Spike Lee is getting Academy Award attention.
Yes.
Finally, for this film. And there were others, Beale Street.
Sorry to Bother You.
Sorry to Bother You, that didn't get as much attention as Green Book. And I feel like the reason they didn't is because older white Academy voters feel more comfortable with a film like Green Book, which on its face is not a hideous story.
No.
It's about friendship.
Yes.
We believe, however, that it is a film predicated on a lot of inaccuracies and a lot of assumptions about, you know, who gets to tell the story of race in right. the United States.
Yeah.
And for a very long time, it's been white people who get to still tell the story about race in the United States. And it feels like this is another one of those.
Yeah.
And so that's why we dislike the film.
If you want to say that, you know, critics have disdain for this film, but audiences are embracing it, that is absolutely true. But I don't think there's anything geographical about it. I don't think California is up
for it. No, it's not California at all. It's a broad spectrum of people across the country.
Yes.
And in terms of America loving the movie, well, the box office for this film is pretty...
not great.
Pretty poor, yeah. So the people who have seen it and liked it, they do love it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people haven't seen this film yet.
Yeah.
It wasn't a hit with critics or the box office.
Yeah.
Which is a weird curiosity about.
Right. Like Bohemian Rhapsody, for all of its bad reviews, made an F ton of money.
Right.
You know, and so it was definitely like a big audience hit. And Green Book is pleasing the audiences that have seen it, but those audiences are a lot smaller.
Okay, so then he goes on to talk about that critics respond to things that bother them politically rather than looking at the film as film.
Mm-hmm.
So he says it bothers you politically, and then he goes on to say, if you have a personal problem and cannot look at an actor or director objectively, you should not review the movie. And that's why he says you should not review the new Quentin Tarantino movie when it comes out. Now... And the final sentence in the review, in the letter is, I guess I want to hear Linoleum Knife review movies, but not politics.
Well,
that's impossible.
Yeah.
I will say this to you very, very straightforwardly.
All art is political.
All art is political. All people are political. All of life is politics. Politics, to me, isn't what happens in the government or...
At the voting booth.
It is every aspect of life. Your personal life is a political act. And so if a film offends my political sensibilities, if it offends my sensibilities about...
worldview?
About my worldview, then I'm going to tell you that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to tell you why. And if it is a well-made film that still offends my sensibilities, I'm going to try to tell you that it's still a well-made film.
Yeah.
Now, is Green Book a film that is a competently made narrative? Yes. And it is also emotionally effective, particularly the ending, which like doubles down on warmth and human goodness and...
understanding.
Community and understanding. And so I remember sitting in the theater thinking, oh, it's getting me. It's getting me. I think everything that came before this has been kind of phony, but this is getting me. So it is a competently made film. It's not inept. It's not badly made. The performances are fine. Except for Viggo Mortensen's, which I think is annoying.
I think if it weren't being held up as one of the best films of a year that had a lot of really genuinely great movies,
right.
we would have moved on by now.
Yeah, I believe so too. But anyway, gets back to the idea of politics. we are all politics.
Yes.
Art and politics and life and religion, race, gender,
sexuality,
socioeconomic considerations. That's what life is, and it's all politics.
And
so we're going to talk about that, and we're going to include that in our discussions, because there's no such thing as objectivity.
Right.
Everyone is subjective about everything, always. And to be clear and to be real about your intentions with what you're, you know, with what you're laying down,
yeah,
you know, opinion-wise on a show like this or in a written review, is to be honest about your subjectivity.
Yeah. Because we're not just saying like liked it, didn't like it. We're telling you why and for what reason and what buttons were pushed and why do those buttons exist in the first place.
Right.
And I think that's a totally fair and valid way to talk about art. And it's not like a movie whose agenda I agree with automatically gets a rubber stamp from me. I agree with everything that Vice has to say about Dick Cheney.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it's a very good movie. Mm. So, you know, it doesn't, just because a filmmaker may have a worldview that is concurrent with mine, it doesn't mean that he gets a pass or she gets a pass on the art part.
Right. Oh, and I mean, let me tell you, as a queer man, I see so many LGBT themed films.
Oh, do you?
That are pro. I do. And the reason I do is because of Mr. Outfest sitting right here at this table.
You have to see so many, Dave.
I see a lot
Poor
of them.
Who are you?
I see a lot of them.
And I see agree way with, more.
Listen, may I finish my sentence? Husband of mine. I agree with them politically. You know, go us.
Yes.
Go homosexual communities. But good God, the level of artistry in most of these films is embarrassing to me. So, yeah, I love these films politically. But artistically? No. Not at all. Or like when I was a young person, very young person, you know. Everyone's like, here, listen to this Christian rock. You're like, okay. I agree with this stuff about Jesus. But why can't the music be not terrible? What if that? So, yeah. Politics are just, it's part of it.
Yeah.
It's always going to be part of it.
And never more so than when the president starts scaring people about things that are happening at the border that turn out to be plot
things
elements from
found,
Sicario Day of the Soldado.
Sicario. Yeah. Anyway, Mike, we are grateful that you are a listener, and we are grateful that you have written this letter explaining what you didn't like about the way we talked about this film. And I hope you keep listening because, you know, we're not here to piss people off and make them angry. I just, you know, but I do want to be very clear that we are what we are and we're going to stay that way.
Yeah.
So please come back.
Won't you?
We're happy you're here. Would you like me to read you all the 5-star reviews?
I would.
Where everyone's kissing our butt, unlike Mike.
Yes. More of that, please.
Wait, let me go down to the bottom and read. Let's go from the top up. This is from Matt F. 815. This podcast is the best film one I've heard, mainly because of how conversational and natural it is. Even though I often disagree with them, I still listen every week because of how well they explain their viewpoints. That's exactly what I was just talking about. How
See?
Well I explain my viewpoint. this is from Dugan. Not Dennis Dugan.
Ooh.
Director of I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Star of Norman, Is That You?
I hope you lovely men know how much joy you bring to your listening audience. I'm new to Linoleum Knife. I'm currently listening my way through 2018 and loving every second. just going to come out and say that Dave's voice makes me feel some kind of way. There, I said it. The love and I'll pronounce that English word. The love and familiarity you share with one another comes through in the best way. I'm soon to be a 50-year-old gay dude who saw the Streisand A Star Is Born when it was released in theaters. Much like you both, I've been viewing and appreciating films for decades. Here's my top 10 list. Knife away.
Oh.
All right, get ready, dude.
Slipping
gonna,
it into the reviews. Interesting.
We're going to knife it up right now. Okay. Jaws.
Sure.
The Hours.
Yes.
Ordinary People.
Okay.
The Crying Game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? The Crying Game.
I know The Crying Game has become problematic.
The Crying Game is problematic. Let's... Otherwise, it's fine, but there's that... Okay, well, we all know.
We know.
There's the trans trap.
Yes.
And it was 1992, and that's just what people did then. And
It's where we were.
Yeah, it's where the world was, and it's not great, but it's part of film history now.
It is. Yeah.
The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Okay.
Dead Man Walking. A Christmas Story.
Mm-hmm.
Edward II.
Ooh.
Yeah. Fargo.
Uh-huh.
Blade Runner.
Okay.
Dude, you're 100% knife.
Totally.
Yeah. Bad Brad 2.
What did he do to Bad Brad 1?
Well, Brad 1 wasn't bad. Bad Brad 2 came along. Vanquished him somewhere.
Ended him.
David Alonso, not only couple goals, but also podcast goals.
Oh, thanks.
This is from Cody the Allfather.
Okay.
Can you explain what that means, Cody? David Alonso are the best hosts to have when needing your film fix. From food to neighbors, guests to anecdotes, it's really the journey of getting to the films.
Eventually we get there.
Yeah. 40 minutes in, they begin discussing the film. They're very good at discussing film while bringing attention to under-the-radar gems. Your day will instantly get better after listening to Alonzo and Dave's banter, and by the time you finish an episode, it will truly feel like you were welcomed into their home to talk movies. Also, your day hasn't been complete until you hear Dave's hearty laughter.
Duh.
Stargaze. Every day is a struggle up the hill for this lonely soldier.
Hmm.
I live as far away from Los Angeles as my family does from my queer life. Though they might actually hear my scream from my front door, they are indeed nearly that close. I would not give such pleasure to either them or myself. I'm becoming sad reading this. I wander the rooms of my home. Everything is mostly silent. I can hear one of my cats stalking a discarded sock. Things are kind of lonely. And I've resigned myself to lying my head at night on the sofa, located in the safety and better energy of the living room. It is there, in the wee hours, that I cuddle up with this podcast. And imagine I'm sharing a chair, indulging in some chocolatey goodness. That's everything that's happening in this house.
Yeah.
Cups of chocolatey goodness. Casually interrupting a sassy Alonzo. You are sassy. I've been meaning to talk to you about this.
I'll take it.
You need to dial down the sass just a little bit, particularly when it's directed at me.
I gotta be me.
Or trying to sound assertive in the presence of Dave's knowing voice. Thank you. It's a voice that knows. Movies are my thing. They're often delivered Movies are my thing. They're often delivered to me from this desert. Thank you for you too, and all the late night hugs I gather from this podcast to send me off into dreamland. Well, that was poetic, and now I'm feeling
a little bummed,
sad. I don't want anyone to feel lonely. I'm glad that if people are lonely, they're listening, and maybe
it is less.
It's
so.
Better. I hope.
Be well. Thank you.
Can't take that kind of responsibility. Yeah.
Thank you to everybody for
thank
the five-star reviews.
Thank
we
you so
appreciate
much for
them.
This.
Leave us
again.
Five,
we're not worthy of this.
Leave us a five-star review on Apple
we're
Podcasts.
We're literally not worthy of this.
And we'll read it on the show. Is that it? Oh, good heavens. We haven't mentioned our Patreon page.
We got one.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
all kinds of monthly subscription levels and all kinds of things you get for those levels, including the brand new $1 level, which gets you some kind of things that'll make you feel some kind of ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
So check it out. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Go subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already and leave us that good review. You can also subscribe to Who Shot Ya and Breakfast All Day, the other shows that I do. And Breakfast All Day does have a life at YouTube. So if you were missing watching us all on What the Flick, we're now back on a camera somewhere. Anyway, check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to Bibbs and Whitney's podcasts, Cancel Too Soon, and Critically Acclaimed over at the Schmoes Know Network. And, of course, check out Schmoes Know. Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and Spotify.
You can send us a letter telling us you disagree with something that we said about a film.
And that's at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You're interrupting me.
I am, but, you know, I had to add that in.
Anyway, Google Play and Podcast and CastBox and Podbean, all those places, you can leave us a thumbs up or whatever. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. He's at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. He's always got fun stuff to go check out. So go hear his new music. And, yeah, we'll be back next week with more. Until then,
goodbye.